Well, welcome to the Adventist Forum. We thank you not only for coming, but for your patience as we've been fighting the technological battles. Our program today is entitled, Checking the Political Pulse of the University, Findings from the 2012 SDA Religion and Social Issues Survey. As you can see, we have a group of presenters, Kurt Vanderwall, John Gavin, William Ellis from Andrews University and Washington Adventist University, and then a discussion by Edwin Hernandez from the DeVos Family Foundations. And then, after all of that, Gary Gray will coordinate a time when you all can jump in and ask questions and make comments. To begin, Gordon Doss is going to offer a word of prayer.
Aware that we must think carefully about political things, that we must be civil and nice with each other as we talk, open-minded. We want to be guided by principle. We want to be disciplined. We want to be diplomatic. Most of all, God, we want to follow you and be your faithful disciples on this earth. And so we pray that this afternoon you'll be present in our discussion, that we will, our eyes will be opened in a way that will make that possible. In Jesus' name, amen.
Amen. I'd like to share with you a sentence from Mahatma Gandhi that I think is appropriate for our discussion today. He said, "Those who say religion has nothing to do with politics do not know what religion is." Our next forum topic, on December 1, here in the same room, is Inspiration, Manuscripts, Mistakes, and Choosing an English Version. Dr. Larry Richards from the Greek Manuscript Research Center here at Andrews will be presenting that topic. And then after the first of the year, we have several speakers that we're still negotiating on exact dates, but I'll give you a little flavor of what's coming up. Dr. Harold Weiss, who has spoken to us a time or two before, will be discussing a new book just published this year, Creation in Scripture. This book surveys not just the first three chapters of Genesis, but the various literature in the Bible, wisdom literature, Psalms, Romans, Corinthian correspondence, Apocalypse, and so on, what those parts of the Bible have to say about creation, along with what the first three chapters of Genesis say. I found it a quite enlightening and perspective-broadening book. Dr. Weiss has encouraged us to, those of you who are interested, to get the book. It's available on Amazon and read it ahead of time because it is pretty heavy-duty stuff at times, and you will doubtless get more out of it if you have a chance to do some reading beforehand. Anyway, that's coming up. Another program is by Dr. Kevin Duran from the University of Colorado Law School, who will be discussing environmental law and ethics. Another program by Dr. Antti Jeronik. His discussion will be based on Miroslav Volf's work, Exclusion and Embrace, a book that's been called one of the most 100 influential books of the 20th century by Christianity Today. That's coming up this spring. And Dr. Stephen Boerma-Prediger on the faculty up at Hope College is going to be speaking to us on the biblical basis for creation care. So that gives you some idea of what's ahead, and we'll give you more details as we get closer, hopefully. As usual, we've got some sheets in the back. If some of you aren't getting email notification and would like to, you can put your name down there and we'll get you on the list. And we would like to thank those of you who have contributed financially and encourage those of you who have or haven't to do it in the future to help us with bringing speakers here. And thanks to Jim for fighting the technology for us and keeping our website going. Well, today's presentation she mentioned, is checking the political pulse of the university based on a study conducted this year on the views of Adventist faculty and staff in North America about current political and social issues. And we're fortunate to have the researchers here to present in person. Curtis Vanderwall, I think most of you know, he's chair of the Department of Social Work here at Andrews and director of the Center for Community Impact Research at the Institute for Prevention of Addictions here on campus. John T. Gavin is chair of the Social Work Department at Washington Adventist University and director of the Center for Metropolitan Ministry. And William Ellis teaches political studies at Washington Adventist University and is associated with the Center for Law and Public Policy. And then they've asked Edward Hernandez, a sociologist of religion who is currently senior program officer for research, education, and congregational initiatives at the DeVos Family Foundations, to serve as an external discussant. Dr. Hernandez has presented here before. He has been co-author of two previous studies with Roger Dudley, looking at Adventist perspectives on politics and religion and social issues. So we've got a lot of good things coming. We thank you all for coming, and some of you from coming from a long ways away to be here with us. So we'll turn the time over to you.
Well, first of all, I'm absolutely shocked with the number of people here. I thought that there would only be about three of us that still weren't burned out on politics at this point in the political season. So it's kind of exciting to see. And several younger folks as well, and some of them aren't even our children. And so that's really nice. It's nice to see as well. So we're excited to be here and do this project. And as was said earlier, we do think that there's a strong connection between politics and religion, and sometimes it's important for us to be able to take a look at ourselves, and in a sense, this allows us to hold a mirror up, at least in front of the university, and see, you know, what in the world are we thinking behind our different disciplines, and how does that all play out? We'll hear a little bit more about who the sample was in just a moment. First of all, I think it's important to think about how political and social identity are connected. And as most of you have probably already figured out, or else you wouldn't be here, politics matters. And it matters not only because it's kind of who runs the country, but it also matters in the sense that it allows us to think and interact with issues of the day, important issues, important social issues, issues that matter to us as a society. And, you know, in as much as we are Christians, we are also citizens of this world. And it's important for us to think clearly, to think carefully, to think critically about the issues that are confronting us as a way of impacting our society in the here and now. I wanted to think just a little bit about the relevance. And in yesterday's paper, and I hear that I got preempted by Dwight Nelson in church today. But for those of you that might not have been at that service and are wondering a little bit more about the relevance of this, of talking about politics on a day like today and on the Sabbath, and I did have a fairly senior administrator that questioned whether or not this was an appropriate topic for Sabbath afternoon. I didn't have a really good response then because I was a little bit surprised. But this is kind of what I would read to him if I had that opportunity, or her. I wouldn't want to give away their gender. I haven't looked. I'm keeping my eyes closed. The Peoria Bishop Daniel Janke ordered priests to read a letter to parishioners Sunday before the presidential election, stating that politicians who support abortion rights also reject Jesus. Quote, "By virtue of your vow of obedience to me as your bishop, I require that this letter be personally read by each celebrating priest at each weekend mass, Jahnke wrote in a letter circulated to the clergy in the Catholic Diocese of Peoria. In his letter, Jahnke cautions parishioners that Obama and a majority of U.S. senators will not reconsider the mandate that would require employers, including religious groups, to provide free birth control coverage in their health care plans. Quote, this assault upon our religious freedom is simply about without precedent in the American political legal system. Quote, today, Catholic politicians, bureaucrats, and their electoral supporters who callously enable the destruction of innocent human life in the womb also thereby reject Jesus as their Lord, Jahnke added. They are objectively guilty of grave sin. Bishop Thomas Paprocki of Springfield went even further. He said, again, I'm not telling you which party or which candidates to vote for or against, which is the clause that everyone starts with, but I am saying that you need to think and pray very carefully about your vote because a vote for a candidate who promotes actions or behaviors that are intrinsically evil and gravely sinful makes you morally complicit and places the eternal salvation of your own soul in serious jeopardy. So, strong language. Does politics matter, and does it matter in religion? I think that we would say that it does in some very powerful ways. So why collegiate faculty and staff? Is this me still?
Yes.
This is still me, yes. For one thing, it's really tough to get a demographic slice of Adventism, particularly in a very short amount of time. And we, in some ways, decided that we knew academia best, and we could have access in some ways to an academic sample more quickly. But it's also a demographic slice. It's a particular slice of Adventism. And we hope that as faculty, not only perhaps we have a voice in Adventist society, we'd like to think that we do occasionally, but we also are training those individuals who are going out into society and bringing our voice and our ideas into the larger Adventist world. And so, you know, we think that at least it's interesting for us to kind of look at the academic world because there might be some influence that does get that does trickle down, if we will, to other parts of society, at least Adventist society. So those are kind of the arguments that Adventist educators consider themselves and may oftentimes be thought leaders, and that often Adventist educators train thought leaders who go out into other places. John?
Well, I thank you for the opportunity, and I want to thank Edwin for letting us build on his and Roger Dudley's important work and my amazing colleagues for working with me on this. I get to talk about the methods. We did a random sample, approximately one-third of all faculty and staff of the Adventist and universities and colleges in the United States. We got we drew the samples from information from the 2012 SDA yearbook. We replicated the study that Edwin and Roger did on religion and public issues survey. We had 59 questions in our survey. We drew from that study, plus we had questions from the Gallup poll, Faith Matters survey, National Civic and Political Survey of Young People. By the way, is anyone here that remembers taking the survey this summer, July? Okay, I want to thank you for doing that. You'll see later what a difference it made in terms of the response. We were able to, because of the support of administrators at four of our institutions, we're able to go to the entire faculty and staff of Andrews University, Washington Adventist University, Union College, and Kettering College. So those four institutions allowed us a way to go to them. This is a bit about the sample. We have two slides for each. One is without anything highlighted. The red is kind of the important part here. These are the largest response rates. We got the largest response from some place called Andrews University. Half of our responses came from Andrews, and it was just over half of the faculty and staff of the institution. Union College was the next in terms of response, followed by Loma Linda and our very own Washington Adventist University. I did say I think that we did this in July and August, which may have been some challenge in some schools that didn't have summer programs going, faculty around. At least that's what we'd like to think at Washington Adventist, where our response wasn't nearly like we would have liked it to be. We had 530 completed surveys, thanks to your help. Faculty and staff responses were about half and half. In the sample, and we have here our data plus the data from the 2004 sample. And remember, our data is faculty and staff, and the other was of general adventists. And we found, and so we compare them here. We found that in both samples, the length of time as Adventist was over 20 years, considerably more in the 2004 sample. Many were second generation, 81% in our sample, 69% in the 2004 sample. Places of birth, almost 80% in the United States, more than 80% in the 2004 sample. And while our sample was split about half each male, female, the 2004 sample had more male respondents. Most were married, 80% and 76% of the 2004 sample. And in terms of age, they were respondents were more above 50 years old, 43% in the year 51 to 65 years, and then 12% in the over 65 years, which is actually a bit younger sample, I think, than the 2004 survey showed. Most had post-college graduate study or degrees, three-quarters, only half of the Adventist sample in 2004. Fully three-quarters were white European-American. Almost 90% in the 2004 sample were white European-American. Here's the summary of all this, what all those tables mean, if you couldn't read that fast. Our sample is more likely to be white, married, second-generation Adventists, above middle age, well-educated, and earning a steady income.
Now to some of the initial findings. We had a short deadline for a Specton priest that we wanted to file off of this initially, and so we didn't complete the data collection until early in September with a deadline of October the 1st. So all that we've done for this presentation and for that article is to take the top off of this. There will be additional analysis that will be done, and it should be more interesting even than what we found here. There are a lot of things that are interesting here. In the first place, Adventist faculty and staff are less conservative than the national average. Now you'll see here what we have here is both the national sample, a national sample from some recent sample surveys, and this particular Adventist sample, which John has very ably described. So Adventist faculty and staff are less conservative than we would have imagined. One half identify significantly as political moderates, and that's this number right here. That is very interesting to us indeed, and I think it will probably be interesting to you. On party identification, it pretty much tracks the national sample. As you can see, you had Democrats, 38% national, 33% Adventist, and so on. But down here at the bottom, there is this interesting finding right here. You had twice as many Adventists as in the national population identified themselves as other parties. Advocates, and you realize that in this election on the ballot, you have three minority parties that are out there. One is the Greens Party, which is familiar to you. One is the Justice Party, and the third is the Libertarian Party. So a lot of our people are involved in those things, apparently. Once again, twice as many Adventists identify with minority parties. The vote for president in 2008, and this is out of our own survey, the national vote, as you can see, for Barack Obama was 53%, slightly more Adventist voted for Obama than not. And then for McCain, you had 37% of the Adventists voted for McCain, 46% in comparison with the national sample. Other candidates, once again, twice as many Adventists involved in that. That is interesting, isn't it? Pardon me?
2008.
Oh, yeah, 2008, McCain. Is that what I said?
Yes.
Oh, okay. All right. Okay. But once again, it's important. It's very interesting to me in particular, these numbers right down here, which you ordinarily wouldn't focus on. The 2012 intended vote, and this is as of July and August when these data were collected, And what you'll see there is SDA faculty and staff prefer Obama over Romney. And you see many more SDA faculty and staff are undecided. That is interesting, too. You see this right down here. At that point, 4% of the national sample from the Rasmussen poll were undecided, but 25% of the Adventist poll were undecided. Isn't that interesting? Now, on this here, with respect to perceived issues, the perceived importance of political and social issues to persons who were faculty and staff in our sample and persons in the national sample. Now, we're going to come to that in a little bit, but this is just the Adventist sample. You see up here at the top, you have the major issues are healthcare, number one. Oh, what is that? What have I done? Yeah, healthcare is number one. The economy is right up there, tied with it, and then education, and then jobs. So what you have basically is a constellation of healthcare and all this stuff dealing with the economies all the way down to tax. And what's interesting about this, and we'll say a little bit more about this in a moment, is down here at the bottom, you see these things down here? Immigration that the candidates have talked a lot about, terrorism they talked a lot about, but abortion, gun control, gay marriage, et cetera, those things are rather at the bottom in terms of people's concern in this sample. Isn't that interesting? So in the importance of issues, the most important the voting decision with the health care, economy, education, jobs, federal budget deficit, and taxes, all that economic stuff and health care, priorities mirror those in the national conversation. Collegiate SDAs appear in the mainstream of American political concerns. Least important to the voting decision, once again, the wars, the moral issues such as abortion, gay marriage, gun control, and birth control. Isn't that interesting? Now, what we have here is the issues that people support in our sample and issues that people object to or oppose. First, on this slide, what you see is the issues that people support, reducing the national debt with spending cuts, running for political office for Adventists. Interesting, 75% said it would be a good thing for Adventists to run for political office. The legal status of immigrants, legal status for immigrants, I should say, are in favor of trying to find a way to do that. Want the U.S. to work closely with the United Nations. Two-thirds basically wanted decreased military spending was important to them. For congressional support of stem cell research, et cetera, et cetera. Now, interesting, you see the teaching creation science in public schools, 59% support that. Health insurance for all, once again, about 60%, et cetera, et cetera. Now, once again, you want to look down here at this bottom one. We're reducing the national debt with tax increases, 45% favored that, but reducing the national debt with spending cuts, 83% favored that, and what you will have is some people favoring both of them, saying that both we should deal with the national debt both by reducing spending, doing spending cuts, and also by tax increases. Do you see that? All right, on to the next. The things that we oppose. First of all, we oppose increasing the role of the United States as a police force in world affairs, and that was a substantial majority, as was the indefinite holding without formal charges of persons suspected of terrorism. The law to allow churches to campaign for or against candidates in political office, we don't like that. Elimination of the phrase under God from mandatory pledge of allegiance, we don't like that. We don't like tax cuts for the wealthy enacted by the Congress. We don't like the wars. We don't like expressing views on social and political issues from the pulpit. We don't like capital punishment, that was split about half. And the government vouchers for religious schools. Next.
So then we started to ask some specific questions that looked at things like the size of government and some of the social issues that we thought might be most controversial and interesting. And you know, one of the first things that you can see here about size of government is about half of our sample said that less government is better, which seems, you know, on the face of it to be a pretty conservative notion. You can see 35 or 36% say, you know, the government should be doing a bit more, and about 14% saying, I have no idea. But, you know, the driving message here is that a half favor less government. Now, here's the contrast, which I think is fascinating. We asked them some questions about poverty and the poor. And this slide's a little bit more complex to look at. So here's the legend right here, where you've got strongly agree in blue and strongly disagree over here in a color that I can't tell. But basically what we have here is that, you know, the percent that either, and if usually what we do in social sciences is we oftentimes add strongly agree and agree together to try and figure out where, you know, the trend of things. And you can see that there's a large percentage when you add strongly agree and agree together. You get almost 90% that say it's important for equal opportunity to be available for all people. So there's an egalitarian streak within Adventism that I think is starting to come out here. Maybe what Dwayne McBride refers to as social utopianism, at least in the Adventist system, sometimes comes out. Is that, did I represent you correctly, Dwayne?
I thought so.
Okay, thank you. The second question, in order for problems to be solved, we need to change public policy. Well, less strongly agree with that, but you still have, you know, close to 55% agreeing with that. We need to look no further than the individual in assessing his or her problems. Very few actually agree with that statement, which tends to help us to at least believe that at some point, this is a group that, although they favor a strong limited government, at the same time they believe that, you know, people's lives are complex and lots of things are going on that are oftentimes outside of their control. It's not just personal responsibility. There's more that's happening. And as you can see here, you know, I don't understand why some people are poor when they're boundless. The next word is opportunities available to them. And you can see very few people agree with that. So the idea here, again, is that, you know, three-fourths disagree that the poor have boundless opportunities, and, you know, personal responsibility is often inadequate. So you have that contrast with limited government, but we understand that people are complex and that poverty, those kinds of things we need to think more complexly about. Now, abortion is the next topic that we looked at, and you can see the question, which of the following statements comes closest to your views on abortion? When you compare this to the 2004 sample that Hernandez and Dudley did, this was a dramatically different picture. What you can see here is that almost 34%, a third of the sample said that abortion is entirely a woman's choice. That's a large percentage. Now, in the 2004 sample, only 13% agreed with that statement. So that's a pretty dramatic difference between those two groups. And remember, the 2004 sample was more representative of the general Adventist perspective than this was. You can see that the largest percentage is still abortion is unacceptable, is acceptable in extreme cases or extreme circumstances, rape, incest, threat to the mother's life. And so there's a moderateness to the votes or the way that Adventist faculty and staff think about these issues. Government and healthcare. The day after, this is how tight our survey was. The day after the Supreme Court made its historic ruling on healthcare, we found three questions that immediately went out from the Pew survey to find out what people thought about these issues. And we plunked those in the day before we actually launched the survey. So that was how hot this was at the time that we put it in. Now, remember back that 50% said that less government was better. Well, in this case, Obamacare seems to fare quite well. You have over 50% who said, yes, we think it's the responsibility of the federal government to make sure all Americans, you read that word, all Americans have health care coverage. About a little over a third that say no, and a small slice that says no opinion. But that's a pretty strong endorsement of the national health care. What's it called? I know it's Obama has said that he adopts Obamacare, but the Accountable or Affordable Care Act. Affordable Care Act. Well, we're not going to debate whether true or not true, but that's the name of the bill. Now, the next question, which gets to whether or not we should repeal the health care law the first day, which if a Republican president were elected, Romney has said that he will repeal health care on the very first day that he's elected president. Well, you can see here that if we include favor and strongly favor together, that well over 60-some percent. I don't have the actual percent, but add 37.5 and 23.2 together. No, I'm sorry. 20. Thank you. The 61.1 would not favor that being repealed. And so there seems to be, in spite of the idea that we're concerned about government becoming too big, healthcare is a really strong area where many faculty and staff agree. One of the things that was interesting, again, we haven't been able to dig deeply into the data yet, but I did look at the difference between faculty and staff, and this was one of the areas. There weren't a lot of differences. I was kind of surprised that we didn't see big differences between faculty and staff in a lot of the issues, but healthcare was one in which, somewhat surprisingly to me, the faculty were stronger supporters of healthcare, the healthcare law, than the staff were. Which I would have thought with tenure, maybe they would be, you know, that faculty would be a little bit more leery of national health care, but they seem to be more supportive of it. I believe I'm switching with someone. Am I still going ahead? See, we rehearsed this ahead of time, and still I screwed it up. I think this is you, John.
I think it is you.
Who is the political Adventist?
No, mine's next after this. Go ahead.
All right, then. So the political Adventist, in brief summary, obviously our sample represents only a slice of the Adventist population. We recognize that, and we realize that makes things more complex. It is fairly demographically representative, similar to the 2004 cohort, with the difference being our cohort tends to be a little bit younger than the 2004 cohort are, and they tend to be much more educated than the 2004 general population sample. But in many other ways, they're very similar. This group, the Adventist faculty and staff, tend to be less conservative. Both are likely to be white, married, second-generation Adventists who are well-educated, well-off. We're going to put that in quotes, relatively speaking, well-off, and above middle age. Isn't that a gentle way to say that? Different in political outlooks, voting behavior, and positions on social political issues. This is an area where we saw that between the 2004 sample, the Fernandez and Dudley, and going back further than that, that this really was a contrast in terms of some of the social issues. And I think Edwin will be saying a little bit more about what he saw as some of those differences. We do, as a faculty and staff, consider healthcare, the economy, education, and jobs is much more important. You saw some real contrast between percentage of importance with economy, education, jobs in the 70 to 50% range. And once you get down to the abortion, national defense, stem cell research, birth control, those kinds of things, those were down in the 20 and 30% range, very, very much less likely to be considered important for this voting cycle. This group tends to be more liberal, or perhaps we would say moderate, depending on what part of the spectrum you're on abortion and birth control. But remembering once again that the faculty and staff are oftentimes thought of as thought leaders within the church, whether we actually are or not, that's open to debate. But we're also hopefully influential over the thought leaders of others, pastors, teachers, future physicians, those who are going out and are leading out in our Adventist church as well. And so we do feel that this sample is an interesting look into the mirror to see, what are we thinking in academia? What are our positions on some of these issues? We do feel like there's a bit of a moderating influence to the extent that Adventists do attend SDA schools and then they go out, and that might have some sort of a moderating effect.
Actually, that was my slide, but he did a better job on it than I would have. thank you, Kurt. He was right. There are some shortcomings and questions that we want to share with you. The relatively low response rate by many schools, perhaps because of the summer data collection, was a concern to us and how representative that is, even of the population we were trying to define. The respondents to this survey may be more politically engaged or more liberal than the average. So those people who chose to take the survey versus those who didn't might be skewed some that way. Andrews University made up almost 50% of the sample, and you folks here may have a different profile than other collegiate Adventists. We also have questions about how these views differ from when comparing faculty versus staff, education level, gender, age, and ethnicity. Those are areas of analysis we haven't explored yet. And we also wonder how do views differ by levels of conservatism, religiosity, and involvement in community activities. Again, we haven't done that layer of analysis. We did look at a lot of issues, and we have a lot of information on them. We only reported to you on a few. These are the others, and we tried to group them some in terms of personal involvement, service, either church-based or community-based, religiosity, prayer, church attendance, Bible study, witnessing, so forth. Military issues, justified wars, decreased military spending, non-combatant status are areas we can still look into. International issues, immigration, Iran, terrorism, foreign policy, and then domestic issues, gay marriage, prayer in public schools, Medicare, and the environment.
Implications. What does this mean for us all? What does it suggest that we need to do? First of all, it would be a good thing if we had more candid, vigorous, and civil, please, conversations around political and social issues, especially in Adventist faith communities. We should do more talk about our shared and disparate beliefs, our outlooks and tensions for the government that we share. And once again, the political discourse in the United States has become, some would say, acerbic at the soft end of it, or outright insulting and evil at the hard end. And what we need to do is take the lead in our own communities in trying to settle some of this stuff down, because we have fallen over into some of that amongst ourselves. We really have. God, our God, is above and beyond political party affiliations. Political and social positions must be rooted in God-centered moral and spiritual principles that defy political typecasting and simplistic labeling. The issues that face this country and indeed the world are so profound and so challenging that it is very important that any and all of us try as much as we can to pull together to see if we can find our way out of the ditch. One of the things that is of greatest concern to many political analysts now is the role of money in politics in the United States in particular. And what has been suggested by some is that with the daunting problems that we now have before us, both nationally and globally, that the institutions of the United States have been so queered by this bold entry of finance into politics, that it may well be difficult, if not impossible, certainly difficult, maybe even impossible to deal with the issues that are before us. Therefore, it is very important for us to take the lead within our faith communities and outside, we believe, to point out that God is above and beyond political party affiliations, that more talk about our shared and disparate beliefs are something that we should do, and that more candid, vigorous, and civil, above all, conversations need to take place in the polity. Well, now, let's hear from Dr. Fernandez.
You don't need this, do you?
I think this last point that my colleagues pointed out there was well articulated this morning by Dwight Nelson, and who deserves a lot of credit for his courageous sermon. And the fact that God is not bought by any particular political party, and that it's an important point to be made. And so in my remarks in response, I first want to congratulate John, William, and Kurt, my colleagues, for their work. It's really an important insight and portrait of a key sector of American Adventism, and let me just say that American Adventism. And so it's important, because in 3 days, Americans will go to the polls to exercise our rights. And by all accounts, it's a very momentous election, two starkly different views, acrimonious rhetoric and partisanship defines this relationship, and the cliff is around the corner, and major consequential decisions will need to be made. In fact, if you go to the Press Spectrum blog, There's an interesting article that was written by Keith Augustus Burton from Oakwood. He starts out by saying there is absolutely no logical reason why Mitt Romney should be leading Barack Obama in any state. And then he goes on to say, don't for a second believe that private meeting held by Trump Republicans politician held on the day of Mr. Obama's inauguration had nothing to do with race. And that elicited a whole interesting conversation that I'm sure many of you perhaps have read by now. So we are in a very heated discourse and conversation. And I think what's really important and interesting is that the way, once the article comes out on Spectrum that the authors have done, you'll see how they intertwine and reflect upon previous work. And unfortunately, Roger Dudley was not able to be here. And I owe a lot to Roger, not just in my own personal life as a mentor. My dissertation actually was written on the topic that ended up being our first book, Citizens of Two Worlds, and it was because of Roger's generosity of spirit to allow me to use that data. But the study builds and adds important insights, and I think I want to say seven, you know, today is the seventh day, Sabbath, and so I want to say seven things to the work, and first I want to start with research methods. The responses are so varied. 54% from Andrews, 4% LOU, you know, Loma Linda. PUC only had 8 people. So clearly, we don't know. There's certain bias towards the politically engaged. I wondered about the gravitas of Andrea Luxton to get so many of you to participate. But it's such a huge. So I was surprised by that. Was it serving in the summer? Was it the yearbook versus all the faculty? Is there a culture of suspicion and fear within Adventism? Does it demonstrate apathy towards broader social political issues? And so the best we can say about this data is that it does provide us with an important portrait and an important slice of American intellectual elites that I think you used that language. Did you?
We didn't use the word elite. We'd
think.
Never say elite.
You never say elite. Okay. So, point number two. I wanna give you 3 quick intrigues that jumped out at me. By the way, I think this is important. My own view on these matters is that it's important for America to have 2 vibrant political parties. It's important to have discussions on all sides of the issues. And it's important for all of us as citizens and well-informed contributors to the common good to understand perspectives that cut across the political spread. So I was particularly interested in the fact there are so many moderate, independent American Adventist faculty in this sample. I think it suggests that indeed there are many people that are trying to look at both parties to understand issues, and I think that bodes well. Another point under this number 2 is immigration. 71% agreed to a path to legalization. Now, as a Latino scholar and person that I am, I've been studying this issue and interested in it because whichever party does not understand demographics in this country, it will soon become, will go into oblivion. You can't run a vibrant political party alienating the fastest growing Latino community, the community in this country, which are Latinos. And that's precisely what the Republicans managed to do. And they will, if they lose this election, which by all accounts, there is a suggested trend towards Obama winning, it'll be to a large degree because of the phrase self-deportation. That Romney argued as he was fighting his way through the primaries. The other interesting subpoint under number 2, my 3 intriguing findings, are about government vouchers to attend religious schools. As someone who is in the midst of education reform initiatives in the state of Michigan and across the country, I think this is a very interesting finding from this sample. I would just simply say that Andrews University would not exist without government vouchers in the form of Pell Grants. Number 3, more analytical scrutiny. It would have been interesting, and of course, I know that there'll be other things that will come out, but in other articles. But I would have loved to have understood more your religious profile of this sample, and clearly, in other words, this survey has some really important and robust ways of measuring religious life of faculty, and I think it would have been interesting to at least touch on these issues in this first article, so as not to give the impression that faculty are leaning in this direction, but potentially also leaning in a direction that is liberalizing to religious faith. And I think it would have been, at least one paragraph would have sufficed. Point number four, I'd like to just sort of point this out about the role of academic, quote unquote, elites, or at least influencers. That's better, academic influencers. I think the authors make an argument about academic influencers, about the long-term influence in the church. The assumption is that thought leaders and parishioners are influenced by the faculty and staff, and that there's an effect around that. So I think that's an important hypothesis, and I was wondering, for example, how the views of Adventist College students, do they mirror those of faculty? I think that'll be an interesting sort of follow-up. Is there a mirroring effect? We know, for example, in research that in the political science and religion field, that pastors have a big influence in what happens to parishioners' attitudes and even political behavior. So even though from the pulpit, people may not espouse direct particular partisan, but people are influenced by the attitudes, by the priorities that are provided. So I would encourage my colleagues to look at some of the literature around the role of faculty in general, both faculty that are in the field of Christian education, for example, the likes of Calvin's, the likes of Wheaton's, the likes of other Azusa Pacific, as well as to look at the influence of faculty in the more secular institutions. And I would draw your attention to the work of Elaine Howard Eklund, whose book, Science Versus Religion, What Scientists Really Think, presents a very robust way of thinking about the role that faculties in general play with religion, which I think would be very instructive and helpful. Fifth is the theme of egalitarianism. I think you used that word, and you referenced Duane's social utopianism, right?
Egalitarian.
I think this is an important issue. There's real sense that the views on social issues and role of government and perceptions on poverty, some of the findings that were shared here, suggests that indeed Adventist faculty staff espouse an egalitarian value system consistent with their own faith tradition. And so the church, and I'd like to point this out, the church has enshrined egalitarian values within its church life and polity, as demonstrated, for example, and the salary pay scales for all workers. So for example, and this is best expressed in the clergy salary pay scale of Seventh-day Adventist clergy. A number of years ago, I had the privilege of working on a project down at Pulpit and Pew, down at Duke Divinity School with a group of other colleagues, and Becky McMillan and Andrew Price did a research across all the American denominations, including Catholics and Protestants and all, titled, How Much Should We Pay the Pastor? A Fresh Look at Clergy Salaries in the 21st Century. And I want to take 30 seconds to simply mention why this is important. And I'm basically going to point out how in the Adventist faith, there's an strong egalitarian value and ethical framework that it has been enshrined in polity and in the way we pay people and clergy. And this is what McMillan and Price said about the findings. Without intentional reflection, the free market alone will determine the price of pastoral leadership in the U.S. Small membership congregations will make do with what they can afford or close. Pastors will continue to struggle against the financial difficulties in trying to fulfill their calls. But several facts should give congregations and denominations cause to consider alternatives to the free market. First, in the midst of abundance, the majority of the clergy have bare minimum salaries and few fringe benefits. Second, competition and ladder climbing characterize much of the call process between clergy and churches. Third, the size of the church determines its market power, and those and thus the quality of leadership it can attract. This puts undue emphasis on increasing membership for economic rather than for missional-driven reasons. Fourth, clergy who are financially dependent upon a congregation are less likely to lead in a prophetic, tough love ways, since such leadership risks losing members and thus dollars. Finally, red flags should be raised concerning the excessively low African-American clergy salaries and fringe benefits, as well as clergywomen's restricted opportunities to serve larger churches. In short, what this group of investigators said, the Adventist way is a better way. And so this raises an interesting question. Do these same egalitarian values extend to the broader society? And perhaps it also suggests that the evidence from the study perhaps suggests that indeed the faculty and staff within Adventist institutions are pointing a way in which egalitarian religious values have consequences and impact on the broader common good. I had a sixth point about religious freedom, which I'm gonna skip quickly, because I've been speaking for 12 minutes. One more minute. We did start a little late. Pro-life worldview. This is an important finding. There is a strong evidence that this sample and framing and the findings around pro-life, but not just on the abortion issue, but on a more broadly issue, can be framed with what I would call a more robust understanding of pro-life positions. Adventist Church has adopted a more nuanced approach to this issue. And the Adventist view on abortion that basically says that those who choose to oppose abortion in their own lives for reasons of faith or philosophy should be respected, but those women who want to make a different personal choice over what happens with their own bodies should be respected. That's sort of like the Adventist way. I mean, we do have a pro-choice with certain clauses for rape and the health of the mother. And I think that this broader pro-life worldview, in my estimation, is the sort of position that argues, for example, similarly to what Thomas Friedman recently said, when and I quote, "The term pro-life should be a shorthand for respect for the sanctity of life, but I will not let that label apply to people for whom sanctity for life begins at conception and ends at birth." What about the rest of life? Respect for the sanctity of life, if you believe that it begins at conception, cannot end at birth. That radical narrowing of our concern for the sanctity of life is leading to terrible distortions in our society. And I think that what this sample seems to suggest is that Adventist intellectuals and people who live in the academy are paving a third way to understanding better this broader issue of human life and so forth. So I'll stop there.
Okay. Given our remaining time, I think we'll take about a half hour for go around the room and everyone can make their political speech. And somebody has to send out for breakfast, I think. Okay, questions about this data?
I can probably talk loud.
Well, but this is being recorded, and we especially want to record your comments.
I only get 10% of the sales. I guess in looking at your data, I would hypothesize there's a difference between the Adventist faculty and the families of the students. So I wonder what kind of tensions you might see between how the families of our students might perceive our pro-Obamacare, pro-universal health care kinds of issues. Do you see any tensions, and is this part of the reason maybe that academics are in tension with Adventist families that send their students here?
That's very kind of you. Thank you, John.
Kirk would like to answer first.
I think that, you know, one of the things that Adventist faculty often have to do is to explore complex issues. And, you know, part of the sort of the opening of minds that are coming to the university is to try to help them to think about, to explore, to explain sometimes very complicated and very not very easily sound-bited kinds of conclusions. And so, you know, I guess I'm a little less worried about that issue because I think, to a certain extent at least, I think parents sort of expect their kids to get exposed to some things that they don't always agree with, that they're not always completely comfortable with. But I guess I've also found that if we can do it in ways that are careful, that are thoughtful, that don't impose our views on other people, but at least help them to kind of think more broadly about issues. Students don't tend to go home and yell at their parents that, you know, we're co-opting them and turning them into, you know, social liberals or even worse, socialists. But that this is an opportunity for students to kind of think more broadly. And I think generally, unless you get into a situation where, some parents, I realize, they're expecting a Bible college rather than a university, and that does run into some problems, and I don't know that we always can handle that as well as we should. I think Dr. Andreasen probably gets way more phone calls than we would realize that he gets trying to manage those kinds of problems when they come up, and I think he does a pretty good job of it. Anybody else?
The only thing I would add is that I think that as we think about, and we want to be humble about what influence we may have. I think faculty would like to think they have a great deal of influence, but to what degree we do have influence, I think a good part of it isn't just in what we say in the classrooms or write on papers, but the way we live our lives and how we relate to the issues personally. And I think that hopefully is a strong example of a way to balance these things out.
One of the reasons why political discourse may have become so difficult in the United States is because so many people cannot really see things from the other fellow's standpoint of view, and they tend therefore to characterize the other fellow's standpoint of view. And indeed, there tend to be in discourses in American politics very simplistic notions generated that don't reflect reality hardly at all. And all you have to do is to think about all these wonderful ads that we've been seeing for the last electoral season. And so I would salute what my colleagues have said, but I think it's also very, very important to maintain the academic freedom of the academy within the Adventist connection so that students who come here or wherever can indeed be exposed to all kinds of ideas. It doesn't mean that they will embrace them, but the point is, in the world that we live in, just take one critical example. Now this is confessional, right? Now, I teach politics, political studies at Washington Adventist University, and I've done this other places for years. One of the things that I've always done is to teach Marxism. Why is that? Am I a Marxist? No, I'm not a Marxist. But so much of the world out there is various different stripes of a Marxist that if we're going to live in this world, we better understand where those people are coming from. And it's not all the work of the devil, for example. Because what you have in Britain, in France, in Germany, in lots of countries that are industrial, you have a very substantial emphasis on this outlook in terms of viewing the whole political system, nationally and internationally. Therefore, it's really important for our people who are going to exist in this world, young people who are going to who need to understand how other people look at this stuff, and that's why we need to really do this.
I didn't mean to cut off all questions there. Please.
I think your point about the discourse is very important, and I really am concerned because our new technology allows us to build a very personal world in which we channel in just the speakers that we want to hear, just the views that we want to hear, and we kind of live in that world. And I don't know that even here in the academy, we are really realizing to the extent to which this is creating polarities. And you see it in the kind of acrimonious comments that we make across to people who we don't understand, who live in these different worlds. If anything, we have a great opportunity, perhaps, to try to bring it together. But I don't know. Do you agree that with this observation that it's becoming worse in a way, even though we have more information than ever? This personalization of the of that information is just creating more tension.
Well, if for one thing, it becomes it has a tendency to degenerate in one into one massive ad hominem. Right? Instead of looking at the facts and looking at what has worked and what has not worked, since that fellow put a tag on him is wrong, and we put a tag on us are correct, without actually getting down into it and looking at the issues themselves.
There's another dimension, and that is there's a very sophisticated manufacture of consent that's going on in our society, where media people are directly manufacturing views and repeating those views in a way that I don't think was as sophisticated in the past as it is today. So that adds to this polarization, this manufacture of consent around certain positions.
Yes, that is true. And what some political analysts have started to say of different stripes, not just of the left or the right or the middle or the back or the front or whatever it is, what some of them have started to say is that there really isn't that much difference when you come right down to it between the Democrats and the Republicans based upon the actual policies that they would put in place. Okay. Now, what does that mean? That means that it gets to be even more important that we listen to the people in the minority parties and that we listen to ideas that come from outside this country, because we have a whole set of really terrible problems to deal with. And if we keep on dealing with them the same way that we have, we'll never get out of them.
The one way that I might disagree a little bit, or at least add to it, is I do think that in terms of the kind of the social issues, there are stark differences. I think in terms of some of the solutions, like, you know, how do we deal with compromises around anything from Social Security, or, you know, the deficit, or how we deal with spending, those kinds of things, there's oftentimes not as much of a difference as we would see is spoken about. But in terms of things like gay rights issues, abortion, healthcare, those kinds of things, we do seem to see very, very, very stark differences and completely different visions about what should be done or not done by the government in order to change those particular beliefs or positions.
Oh, you have a point, certainly, and we need to make this a multi-log, so I'll just be quiet for a time after I say this one thing, which I really feel compelled to deal with. When it comes to the federal budget, everybody says, on both sides of the aisle, right, Democrat, Republican, Democratic presidential candidate, senatorial candidates, others, Republicans. Okay. The problem with the budget is overspending on so-called social programs, the entitlements. Ladies and gentlemen, one half of our federal budget, if you really look at it carefully, is given for warfare. 50% of the federal budget, roughly, is for warfare. It's aftermath and all the rest of it. You just take the Defense Department budget, add into it a major part of the Energy Department budget, add into it all of the Department of Veterans Affairs, and a whole bunch of other stuff that's in there. And this amount is equal to all the rest of the spending on warfare on this planet. Those are real. These are not controvertible facts, right? So why don't the Democrats and Republicans talk about the defense budget? Well, they do every once in a while talk about it a little bit, right? But basically, it is not a major part of the fiscal debate. And I think that's one of the places where there clearly is not very much difference between the parties, and it's an important place.
Let me venture a question then. I'm from English, and so numbers sort of all blend together in my head. But maybe, Edwin, could you talk about a little bit more, refresh my memory about the major shifts between 04 and before? How are Adventist views changing in this sweep, even from before your and Roger's study in 04? Are we getting more liberal, more conservative? Are we focusing on different issues than before, et cetera, et cetera?
Yeah, well, unfortunately, these are different samples, and thus you're not able to draw those conclusions from the 2004, for example, the last time that we did a national sample of a you know, sort of typical church membership. The problem is with Adventism, doing research in Adventism, is that we have poor mechanisms to do it. And that's a topic perhaps of another day. By that I mean we don't have a good structure for carrying out good, solid social science research. You know, Jerry Thayer's here, and there's a number of others. You know. And so when we did that 2004, it was based on a particular mailing list of a particular printer, and it was skewed and biased certain directions. This is very much looking at a slice of a different population than we did in back in 2004. So I can't answer that question really, Gary. Adequately. I think that what neither of these two surveys captures is what, you know, back in 95, I wrote a piece for Spectrum called The Browning of Adventism. And what neither of these two really gets at is the whole phenomena that American Adventism is quickly becoming a church of immigrants, of people of color. And that that indeed you have a bifurcation really in the regular church membership, which is between essentially whites and people of color. People of color in the pew of American Adventist churches is basically one that it favors democratic and more liberal positions in general. And that's sort of a trend, and it continues. I mean, if you read Keith's piece today in Spectrum, you'll see basically what a large part of African American Adventists probably share, and that's what we found early in our research. So, I know that doesn't quite answer your question. So we really don't have a panel of Adventists family sort of polling, right? We don't have a way of getting at the pulse of the soul of Adventism. And this is an issue that I think that institutions like Andrews and other is that how do we build the research infrastructure to really be able to have a better sense of the direction of our church and its tendencies and its issues? And it's a topic that I care a lot about because I'm a product really of what happened to me in connection to Roger Dudley and Des Cummings when I was a seminary student here at Andrews. But we're really behind. As a church denominationally, we are really 20 years behind, I would say, about what serious scholarship should be doing with respect to, particularly in the area of religion and life in general about Adventism.
Edwin, just to respond to that, you probably know David Trim, or David Trim, the new director of the General Conference Department of Archives, Statistics and Research. And he has started initiatives. He's reshaping that department in a way that is very favorable to research. And I'm hoping that this will lead in a very positive direction.
No, thank you. I would have just some caveats. You know, if you have an eye problem, you probably won't go to a pediatrician. And I think that my concern about the devolution of research is that anybody can do social science research. And I think that what I would add to the work of David Trim and others is how do we set up quality control systems, peer review processes, to ensure that proposals and projects that are funded by the church are carried out with good methods, with people that understand that they can carry it out. And that's my only, you know, again, I don't know all about it. Next week, we're going to have a big conference here on campus, and I hope to speak to some of those issues in a more substantive way. But I do worry about the devolution of research without building and building upon the work of others, right? And bringing other voices. Because if I contract somebody in X place in the world and don't connect with people in the other part of the world that are actually experts in that area, if I don't bring them together, we don't build on what we know and the expertise that we have.
Uh, I'm wondering if there are any websites that entertain the opinions of Adventist students at the college level. There are a couple that entertain Muslims and their opinions about democracy and Islam. And I haven't accessed these, but I have read reports of them, and there is apparently a lot of chatter going on among Muslim students from America to the Middle East. And this is all available on these websites. I suppose then that it's easier to know what's going on in terms of young Muslims' attitudes towards politics and democracy in particular, especially in light of the Islamist party's ascendancy in Egypt, than it is to know if Adventist students favor Republicans or Democrats, or whether they tend to be liberal or conservative. Is there such a site, and if there is not, would that be an adequate or at least a source of research for you to look at?
We're not aware of and I think that's the problem that Edwin pointed out. Doing these kinds of things is very, very difficult within the church. At a very practical level, I spent more of my career trying to get lists for fundraising than for research, but it's the same practical problem. And I don't know if my friend Bruce Moyer would agree with me or not, but I think doing research or being evidence-based research in the North American Division, General Conference, ADRA, the centralized places, is very, very difficult. I found it to be rather research-resistant. And I'm glad for these new efforts. I tend to be a bit of a cynic on most things, but I'd like to see them improve. But I think at a very practical level, it's very, very difficult to even with the, how do we get lists of Adventists so we could survey them? How do we get at them? Is a very practical thing, and I think it's very politicized still with the church, and that probably will skew what we try to find out. So.
This is maybe directly addressing your question, Joe. I don't know if there are any websites. I think one of the things I am frequently frustrated by is that it's very difficult, and I won't include any of the students that happen to be in this room today, but it's very difficult to get students interested in politics generally, but social issues around particular topics. And it's very difficult, and I don't know. Obviously I'm skewed because of my own department, but the classes that people groan the most about are social policy. The classes that people are most frustrated with are those in which we try and engage students on what's happening in their world. Not just their kind of network, their personal life, but just in general, what's going on in the world. You try to talk about something that doesn't relate to a particular movie or a book. No, I should have not said book. A particular movie. It's very, very difficult. And so I think one of our roles is hopefully to try to engage students in that process and to try and get them more interested. I sometimes speculate about what some of the reasons are. I think even sometimes the way that Adventism is a very individualistic religion in the sense that we oftentimes look inward. We're preoccupied with our own salvation and our own behaviors. It becomes very, very difficult for us to look externally at social issues and social concerns and to be worried about what's happening within our neighborhoods or within our state or within our world. And I fear sometimes that we have a hard time engaging students in that process for those reasons.
One of the things that I've wondered about for years, and I don't know, someone would have to research it, do Adventist young people have different viewpoints of politics when they're young versus when they get old? And how does it change? I know some Adventists who have changed it from one party to the other, and then back again to the middle, and back and forth, and others stick their shoes in the concrete and stay there forever. I'm just wondering what's behind that.
Well, back in 2004, if you break out the sample by generations, even though we didn't get a lot of young teens, or but the younger crowds tended to be aligned differently than the older. So there is a sense in shifting over time, and that's partly the influence of academia, and there's quite a bit of evidence to that effect, that universities do have an effect in some of these issues. What I think was sort of interesting, I want to go back to this sort of middle of the ground, independents, moderates, because I think that part of the issues that heightens bipartisanship is the labeling. And the labels, when in reality, part of the hope that Obama provided when you had actual Republicans from the South voting for him back in 2008 was this notion of transcending. It didn't work very well. It appears, right? But that this notion that if we can look beyond party alignments and recognize that there are policy positions that are actually beneficial in all sides, and how do we create common ground? And how do we internalize that as a community of faith, right? So right now, for example, there are six proposals in the Michigan ballot right now. They're being framed as red or blue, right? Propositions 1 through 6. Right? But the question is more than just red or blue. It's a question of what is good policy, and having the conversation right on campus, which I'm hope it is about some of these issues, because some of these have serious consequences for the state of Michigan. Is something that I care deeply about. But this notion of going beyond the bipartisanship, because we typically look at something and we say, who's supporting it? Is it the party that I simply vote for? And we assume by virtue of that that it's good because it's supported by my orientation or my party affiliation. And I think that's the danger, right? And how to walk that middle third way is, I think, an important step.
Okay. All right. You comment at the beginning that someone approached you and said that maybe this forum was to another date, isn't it? Yeah, the week, exactly. I think the same happens with youth, that we're not involved in community or in politics because it's not our space. Our space is in the church and with the goals of the church, which is a different mission and vision. If there's a way that the same, there's a pressure of saying, look, don't get too involved because you may have problems with your beliefs. If you're too deep into the social part of the world, let's stay here where it's safe. And you can keep the Sabbath and you can do things in under your conscience. So I believe that there's also some of that prevent us to not get like very strong into that other arena. And so we say, well, I'm not gonna succeed there. I'm not gonna be too successful, so I may stay here. And that's it. No.
Did all the people in your sample actually vote, or do you know? Did you ask whether they voted?
In our sample, we asked how they voted in 2008, and then how they intend to vote in 2012.
We also asked if they are planning to vote, intending to vote, and that was at a 92%, I believe, that said that they were planning to vote of those who completed the survey. So, yeah, 92%. So that would tend to make us believe that this is a bit of a skewed sample that actually answered this. Maybe people who are more politically involved or interested in general.
It seems to me like the main difference, a difference about a university education and a Bible college, is that kids in a university, we try to get them to think dialectically, to look at both sides of the issue, and then kind of come to some conclusions from that. I'd really be curious, because there's such, this sample is so skewed. You know, Andrews University, almost half of the respondents came from Andrews University. I'd be curious, if there were a more representative sample, if we'd see any evidence of the difference, let's say, between more mature, well-developed universities like Loma Linda and Andrews compared to other schools that are mostly undergraduate-focused schools. Even if you look at undergraduates at the different at a university, at Loma Linda or Andrews, would they be different than La Sierra or Southwestern or other campuses? It's kind of disappointing that it wasn't a better return. And I'm just, you know, there's a part of me, it's a little, like John is a little cynical about why maybe that, you know, there weren't responses from other schools. And maybe the word was that they weren't encouraged to participate as we were, you know, here at Andrews.
And those are great points. And I think that we would like to find a way to do that. I think the practical aspects of trying to do this make it so difficult to find out what we really would like to know. I think some of our speculation about response rate, I think there's some universities that are obviously more involved in research and are used to getting invitations to respond, and I think that affected the response rate some. And I think there's also some had to do with the summer and what some schools have programs going in the summer, some don't. I think that was part of it, but I think a big part of it, and that's just a speculation, but is that some institutions just have more going on of that, and they're more used to research and being offered the invitation to participate in it instead of something that comes along, you know, doesn't come along as often.
We have two questions, and I think we'll stop there. So,
what is the reason for Seventh-day Adventist as a denomination or a movement to exist? We're 188 in our 188th year beyond the great disappointment. I'm old enough to remember in the 30s and the 40s that we saw ourselves not only as an end-time movement and part of the ending of the Protestant Reformation. 1798 was a very important date, if you'll remember. Most of our kids know nothing about that today because they are generations removed, even from me. I believe that part of the reason why we see change, even from 2008 to this year, in political responses, is that because of that, we have lost a lot of our sect identity and are becoming more of a, quote, in spots, mainstream denomination. How do you see this with respect?
It's interesting that your comment is very perceptive. You know, in preparation for today, I was rereading some of Douglas Morgan's book, in which he basically says that contemporary Adventists should learn from the tension of the earlier church, in which it was always vigilant about the Christian villain, which is America. Connecting that to Nelson's sermon today was very stark, because I think the part of the issue has been that in America, there is a sort of a national sort of sentiment that God belongs here. I mean, Billy Graham had a one-page ad, and by this I'm not trying to advocate one or the other, but when you have Billy Graham basically saying that, you know, I urge you to vote for those who protect the sanctity of life and support the biblical definitions of marriage between a man and woman, and support Israel. That kind of gives you a sense, right? And so I think your point about sectarian tension without being assimilated into a larger cultural ethos, right, of defining, I think is very important. And I think Douglas Morgan's book, the historians in the room, should remind us that at times religious movements get kind of accommodated to its broader context economically, and that sort of prophetic voice alluring to a whole number of self-interested issues, right? That was part of my comment earlier about the egalitarian ethos and ethics of Adventism. You know, what does that mean? We know what it means internally, but what does it mean to translate into the public good, into the broader issues? But I think that your point is well taken. It's very interesting.
About your the statistics you presented, it seems you were making a comparison with a national sample. Was that a sample of academics, or was that just a national sample? Because my impression is that actually the Andrews, well, the Adventists that you sampled here, the academics you sampled here are very moderate compared to the academy as a whole in this country. And therefore that those parents who might think that they're sending their kids here to become liberals, this is a good place to send them to have a moderate, good discussion rather than a place where you will find your kids being preached to by liberals.
Then they can go to graduate school and become liberals. By the way, I want to say hi to Pastor Zork, whose voice I didn't recognize, until I heard his voice. Thank you. I think there were at least one more question here. I think we could squeeze it in.
Let me just say one word about that. The response to this question here about the comparison that needs to be done with other surveys that have been done of other components of the academy. Yes, we need to do that. The answer to that is yes, and we intend to try to find those. Get it right.
That's why the work that I was suggesting around, academics and religion is important, because you're absolutely right. The way it can be framed negatively in one sense, right? When actually Adventist academics could be not just very moderate, but very conservative.
I was just wanting to know, when the surveys went out to all the professors across the country, were they to put their names on this, or was it no? Because I'm thinking is, perhaps if I was in a situation like that, I would not want to put my name for fear of being labeled one way or the other. So I was just wondering how that came about.
Yeah, we had to be very careful in terms of even some of the questions we asked, because a sample could be so small we could find out who answered. So it was anonymous, and people were invited but not even urged to participate, and then it was totally anonymous. And many did not put what, or not many, but a certain number didn't put what college or university they were affiliated with. I don't remember the number, do you folks? But relatively small, but some chose not to, probably for a similar reason. So, good question.
Okay, I think we'll stop there. We thank the gentlemen for their research and putting this program together.